Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. I'm Colin, and I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
Things are going okay. Not much is happening at the moment. We are trying to work out a schedule for the next few weeks. We actually have like a firm plan for what we're doing with non-spy-related stuff. I know you're going to get onto that in a minute.
Yeah, actually, we get into that right now. We are going to be doing a giant episode before the finales of The Amazing Race and Celebrity Apprentice. I think whichever one comes first, which I think is The Amazing Race.
Right, and we're going to be inviting someone that we both know, a mutual friend of ours, Matt Rodriguez, who's a big fan of both shows, who I think is going to be a good guest. He's pretty knowledgeable and is a funny guy. Should be good.
Yeah, and very disagreeable. He likes to disagree with us a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looking forward to that a lot.
So if you're frustrated by us agreeing too much, he takes disagreement for the sake of it to a whole new level.
Absolutely. So I think that's all we have before we get into this week's episode. So are you ready to do that?
Sure.
All right, and just quickly as a little reminder that we like to do, last week we saw Jay end up getting the axe, I guess. Kim, you know, the will of Kim coming down on him, and now it appears that Troyzan's going to be in the hot seat this episode, so that's really where we're at entering now.
Right, and one of the most interesting things about any episode is how they portray the events of the previous one in the recap, because it contains clues about how the editors want you to see various people, because... Like, let's say you miss an episode and you tune in for the next one. This is your guide to what has just happened. They're trying to summarize 40 minutes of the show and 3 days of actual gameplay into this sort of 30-second minute long segment. And so the way they choose to do that is going to be very enlightening. And that doesn't change this week, where we see it being portrayed as Troyzan being isolated from the group, that Kim is the one who's responsible for Jay's boot, which was portrayed pretty neutrally, I thought. Like, they didn't go out of the way to portray it as a bad move on her part or a good move on her part. It was just, you know, Kim was competent, she did it, it's done, we're moving on. And the sentence that they closed out the recap, which I thought was pretty significant, was Jeff Rose asking, can Troyzan find a way back in? And I think what this episode showed is that no, he can't, even if he tries his hardest.
Yeah, and actually, it's interesting you mentioned that, and this is jumping way to the end of this episode, but he closed his tribal council at the end of this episode saying, Troyzan and Tarzan, can you try to find a way back in, guys?
Well, specifically, he said, I wrote this down because I thought it was relevant. He said, you have two options. You can win immunity or you can find your way back in. And we've seen that Troyzan pretty much prevented himself from finding a way back in, so now his only option is to win immunity, and it remains to be seen if he can continue to do that.
Yeah, well, we'll get onto all that in due course. But let's start right at the beginning, because this episode, this opening scene, is right after that tribal council. It's back at their camp, and this really sets the mood for pretty much this entire episode, which is Troyzan versus the world. And it's Troyzan getting into it around the campfire with Christina and Alicia. And again, this is just right after their last tribal council, and this again is just not the last time this episode that we'll see Troyzan perhaps misplay a bit from a social perspective, game-wise, in terms of he does a lot, I think, to potentially throw away some jury votes should he make it to the end. But we'll be getting into all that. And this scene, I think, basically serves to kind of just remind the viewer that, okay, this Troyzan guy's on the outs, and he's the next one. He's on the hot seat again.
Sure. I thought one of the most interesting things here, where you see Alicia defending Christina, which would have been unthinkable a few episodes ago. And I believe it was this episode, it might have been last week, we saw Christina wearing Alicia's dress as well. It seems like the two of them have patched things up a bit.
That's right. Yeah, actually, I think last episode there was something else, too, that now I'm, of course, spacing on, that kind of signaled to me that Christina and Alicia obviously felt fairly comfortable with each other. And then, of course, this opening scene where they're kind of standing up for each other and now both seem very happy at the bottom, granted, of their current alliance.
Right. We've seen this idea being floated a few times in various episodes that the old Monono tribe, by old, I mean the Monono tribe after the swap, might reform, get back together. Now, my natural instinct was to think this was just the specter that Kim was holding around people's heads to try and keep them in line. But it seems like this might actually be happening. We see Alicia, Christina, and even Tarzan starting to become closer and closer together. So down the line, if things do get switched off a bit, those three could be crucial role players.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility, but I think the thing that's brought them all together, the common bond there, is a loyalty to Kim. And I think that's kind of, in terms of, I don't know what if we're going to see a real new Monono regrouping coming
that's
up.
That's fair. And if you're trying to think of how the alliances could be shifted around a bit, Christina, Alicia, and Tarzan aren't going to form this I'm going to have a coherent strategy. They're not going to be this smooth, slickly engineered voting block. They're just going to be doing whatever someone else tells them to do.
That's right, and there's really no one, in the now, the Fab Four, as they're being called now, the Fab Four, of course, being, Kim, Chelsea, Sabrina, and Kat, none of them really have much incentive to flip at this point, and that would take really, one of them to kind of lead this new group of misfits being Tarzan, Alicia, and Christina, cause again, like Dom mentioned, they're not really gonna come up with a plan themselves.
Yeah, I think Kat, you can argue, has an incentive to flip, but we know that's not gonna happen. And by no, we don't mean we've read spoilers and notes, we mean we've seen the episodes, we've watched Kat on TV, and we know it's not going
to
happen.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone who listens to our podcast regularly could really have many grounds to accuse us of reading spoilers, given how often we're wrong about stuff.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, let's keep moving on. And then, you know, we get the theme song, and then we get basically just more of Troyzan spazzing before the reward challenge, and, you know, Chelsea telling him, listen, you know, your game's basically over. We want you to kind of take it like a man, like Jonas did. And maybe Jonas deserved to stay here over you, or maybe he deserved to be here longer. And Troyzan doesn't really take kindly to that. And it sets up a really negative vibe between, it's just another one of many things that sets up a negative vibe between Troyzan and the rest of the camp. As we enter the Survivor auction. Now, this is something we see pretty much every season on Survivor, if not every season.
Well,
and this is always big fun.
Well, we say every season, but we haven't seen it for what? Why was it?
I guess actually on the Redemption Island season they didn't even. I don't know. I could have.
So in other words, we don't have an auction every season, but it's
we don't have an auction every season. Whatever.
It's nice to see again.
We have them quite frequently. There, it's nothing new. I guess is the point.
The point is taken. Yeah.
Everyone listening knows about the auction. Everyone gets $500. This season, actually, before we even get into the results of the auction, I want to talk about this. This season, there's no sharing of money or food. And I right off the bat, I really like that rule. I don't like it when they can share money and share everything and just split up.
Because when you let people share money, it means that if there is a majority alliance in place, members of that can spend whatever they want with the knowledge that if something relevant does come up later, they can just pull their money and outbid whoever needs it. So let's say they're able to pull their money and the clue came up. Then let's say Kim has $40 left, Sabrina has $120 left. They can all just put this together and outbid Troy, guaranteed, because he's not going to be capped at 500, essentially, whereas they're not. This way, if any of them choose to buy it, then it's incumbent upon other people to outbid Troy individually, which, as we saw, none of them were willing to do, and it ends up working out well for him because he gets a clue and walks away with the immunity book.
By the way, there was absolutely an auction in at least Samoa, and I feel like there might have been one in Heroes vs. Villains, but in Samoa, I distinctly remember Mick bidding 500 as soon as he saw like a stake, which is always the strategy I go with. See something awesome that you really want and bid the whole thing and lock it up. But, and we'll get more into that.
The fabled Mick trimming strategy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. His biggest contribution to Survivor.
Well, I think it's worth discussing, though, because if you're in Troy Dan's position there, he said before the challenge, if a music clue comes up, I'm going to bid 500 on it. Then we get to the thing, and he refuses to bid 500, didn't he? Like, if
right.
You're in that position, you instantly bid 500. There's no question about it, because now, because Christine still had all her money left. If she bids 500 out of the gate, then you're screwed.
Right, or if she just gets to 500 before you, and we saw that again happen in the Samoa thing, where both people, it was just a matter of who got to 500 first. I know it was Jason and someone else, both trying to get to 500. But yeah, let's get right into it, because obviously the major strategic point of interest in this auction is the immunity advantage, which we've seen in many seasons, and Troyzan clearly knew about that this was going to be something that was going to be going up for auction at some point, because he's been a fan of the show for a really, really long time, and I thought it was good that finally that kind of fandom is paying off, and I think there are several spots along the course of the game where that being very familiar with the show helps, and this is definitely one of them.
Right, but you expect Kim to be familiar with that as well, given how big of a fan of the show she is. So it's a little surprising to me that she allowed this to happen, but I can understand her wanting to buy things for herself, and thinking that, you know, there was seven other people here who want to stop Troy from winning immunity, at least one of them's going to outbid him. But even so, maybe she dropped the ball, I'm not sure.
I don't know if she really dropped the ball. I think, obviously, because again, if she knows Troyzan knows, and if she knows Troyzan's going to wait for just that, she probably also can extend that logic to mean Troyzan's going to bid 500 as soon as he sees it. Now, obviously, we don't see that happening, and we'll get into that in a second. Where it's a bidding war between Troyzan and Christina because they're the only ones with 500 left. And the girls ultimately get mad at Christina for not going up to 500. But Troy Zane, as obviously, again, as you mentioned before the auction even began, that he was going to wait and hold his money and bid all 500 on that advantage for the challenge. But then starts the bidding at 300, and then Christina makes it 360, and then they just keep clicking it back, as we say in poker, where they just keep min-raising each other in increments of 20, and neither one wants to go to 500.
Right, I thought that was a silly thing by Christina as well, because Christina, as we know, is not the most well-liked person out there. Mm-hmm. She's not sort of in the core of what's happening strategically. The best thing she could do at this point is to do something which endears her to the rest of her alliance, which would be to be the one to outbid Troy and keep the immunity advantage for the women. And also, like, let's say she takes the advantage and goes on to win the challenge herself. That's one thing she can start to pad her resume with if she does make it to the end, because now she can say, look, you may not like me, you may not respect the game I played, but at least, you know, I made the decisions that Happy made, I won immunities here and here. You know, you have to at least respect that.
Yeah, fair. I really don't think there's much Christina can do at this point. I honestly feel like she probably knows it at this point. I don't know who's been I guess, this now's as good a time as any to talk to Christina, because I'm not sure how long it's going to take. But I'm not sure what Kim's been promising her in terms of keeping her in line, but she really doesn't seem like she's ever considered flipping. Obviously, this episode, Sarah got into it with Troy Zan several times, which is obviously who she was going to have to flip with.
Yeah, Christina seems a lot like Leaf in that she just wants to go with whatever the majority wants to do. She doesn't really care what that is as long as it doesn't affect her, which is why I think Kim probably realized correctly that she was never really a danger to flip, because, you know, if you say to her, look, if you flip, you might be forcing rocks. That's not the sort of thing that she's going to go with.
By the way, I want all the Sandra fans out there to start jumping on the Christina bandwagon, because they are playing exactly the same game. It's just not working
identical.
Out as it never, ever should be. Not never, ever, but as a super low percentage of the time that it does work out when you're Sandra. And again, it just happens to have worked out twice for her. It is a super low percentage play.
Well, the way I phrase it is that if you think about the demographic makeup of every season, for lack of a better phrase, there are going to be lots of players like this on every season, players who are just happy to go along with whatever's happening and who don't really care what the specifics of that are. So, yes, statistically, some of them are going to make it to the end of win occasionally. That doesn't mean that it's the best strategy, and doesn't mean it's the best strategy just because one person happened to do it back-to-back.
Right. Yeah, and back-to-back, the second one being an all-star season where, justifiably, no one really had any reason to fear her.
Right. We've seen this on Survivor and other shows as well. On All-Star seasons, the least threatening people are always the ones to do the best. Even on The Amazing Race, where there isn't really heavy skill component, we saw that Eric and Danielle win All-Stars over like 9 or 10 other more deserving teams. At Big Brother, we saw Boogie, who is arguably the least worthy of being invited back of all the cast, with the exception of possibly Erica.
and then Erica getting in second place.
Right, exactly. The Survivor All-Stars, we saw Amber against Boston Rob, who, even though he stepped up his game, was 10th on his original season, and people were surprised that he was brought back as well. So, you know, you start to notice a trend here.
Right, yeah. Well, let's get back to this current season, I guess. Enough editorializing for now. Let's just quickly go through the rest of the rewards, because I think those were, or the rest of the auction items, because I think there was some noteworthy stuff in there. The first thing, not necessarily noteworthy, is that Chelsea gets 3 donuts and a nice coffee, which I thought looked fantastic, and I probably would have bid quite a bit on.
Hold on. You thought the iced donuts and coffee looked fantastic and you would have bid on them, or you thought Chelsea looked fantastic and you would have bid on her?
I wanted 500 immediately on Chelsea, but the iced donuts, as you call them, or the regular donuts and iced coffee. No, it's fine. But again, I guess nothing noteworthy there. Sabrina spends 400, by the way, on chips, guacamole, and a margarita, which was the reverse steal of the draft.
Right. I like how this auction was just a microcosm of the entire season, because we have various people just spazzing out left and right, and then Kim just calmly crushes the auction like she has the whole season.
Yeah, Leaf gets a protein shake for 100. No one really notices or cares. And then let's get to Kim now, I guess, because Kim makes out like a bandit in this auction. She gets the normally one of the hottest commodities, both literally and figuratively, is the shower. Or sometimes it's a bath or whatever. And Kim gets this for fucking $40. Someone leaves 20, Kim makes it 40, and everyone folds. I don't know how she pulled that off or what. She has just embarrassing photos of everyone on the island, and that's why they're all just succumbing to her will at all possible costs. But any theories about how Kim managed to pull that off?
I have no idea. My theory was that, given that we didn't see Leaf for the rest of the autumn, I thought what would happen was Kim would be taking a shower, and then 15 minutes in, she'd look down and see Leaf just standing there with, like, this Stewie Griffin look on his face.
Stewie Griffin look on his face. Got a BLT for $180, which, by the way, happens to come with bacon. And then, okay, Kim again gets peanut butter and chocolate, this time for $220, but normally, again, that's one of the someone usually spends their entire bankroll on that, one of the girls.
Yeah, and she managed to get it while she's still having her shower.
That's right. Yeah, she gets out of the shower and comes out and bids in her towel. It was very, it was well played, well executed. Well, it could have been better executed on the part of the cameraman, I thought, but I guess not on a family show, I guess.
Keeping it PG-13.
Right. Yeah, now, it's noteworthy that, your boy Tarzan hasn't even considered bidding up to this point, because as people at home may or may not know, the money you don't spend at the Survivor Auction, you get to keep in cash when you're done with the show. So if you don't spend any of your money, they'll give you an extra $500 whenever they pay you at the end of the show. And he's got his Jeep is apparently needs some new shocks, so he's going to hang on to the $500 and fix them.
I mean, it's surprising that given that he's a plastic surgeon who's presumably rolling in money, like, he probably sleeps on a bed of hundreds or something, that he needs this extra money to buy adjustments for Jeep or whatever. But he eventually breaks down and spends the money on a letter from home, which... this is the worst part of every auction for me, because if somebody starts crying, and this sappy, saccharine music gets overlaid, and it's all very nice and emotional, whatever, but yeah, too much for me.
Well, let's talk about those letters from home, because we've seen Alicia sit there and bid very, very small amounts, but not really take any items seriously. And then as soon as Jeff pulls out the letter, she immediately breaks down into the tears and screams out, you know, $500 for the letter. Which, by the way, way to keep the price low for the other people, because whatever the person gets it, everyone else can buy theirs for the same price.
Yeah, if you know that the auction is going to happen, you have to organize it beforehand, where somebody bids 20 and gets that letter, then everyone else is just free to bid 20 and get theirs as well. But no, at least you have to spaz out and ruin it for everybody.
Right, but then Tarzan says immediately, without much hesitation, spends his $500 on a letter, but wouldn't read it aloud.
Yeah, I liked how Alicia said that her dad had never written anything to her before, as if she was, like, unloved as a kid, which would explain a lot, frankly.
Yeah, that was it. I didn't really know what to make of that, because she seemed like she was so desperate to get that letter, but if she's never really, she's bidding $500, who knows what she's going to get?
Right, this is the first time we've seen anything resembling positive from Alicia. Like, yeah. It's just been this hotbed of negativity so far, but it's kind of disconcerting, actually.
Yeah, if Alicia turns into some kind of, like, sympathetic character over the second half of the show, I'm not going to be very impressed.
Well, they already managed to try to do it with Troyzan, which isn't really working too well, but we'll look at the reasons why later. But, yeah, I was wondering what would actually be in Tarzan's letter. Like, I thought they would just show him by having a picture of his Jeep with his shitty wheels or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he married? Do we know his situation?
Yeah, he had this, like, 6-minute-long secret scene where he talks about how he misses his wife and how they do everything together and they've never been apart and stuff like that.
Oh, well, there you go. That explains it, I guess.
Which, I mean, given that, you can understand why he got so emotional. And given that he's Tarzan, you can also understand why he got so emotional.
Yeah, so then the next item we get is, again, the advantage and the challenge. We've already gone over that. Troyzan picks that up. And then I have these notes done just chronologically. So after Troyzan gets that advantage, he and Sabrina start kind of like bickering back and forth on the bench. And we'll get into more, because this is not the last time that we see Troyzan and Sabrina get into this episode. And there's kind of this negative vibe, but, my girl Kat still has money left and she wants some more items. And the next item comes covered with, and then also comes with a note. It seems kind of interesting, I guess. And it ends up getting sold to Kat for $160, and it ends up being cake for everyone. Now, what was interesting to me is, and after a certain amount of time, clearly this theme was developing, there were no dummy prizes this year. You know, usually there are going to be some things that he keeps covered, and then people bid on them. And I know, like, Stephen Fishback got, like, chicken hearts, and, like, James, I don't think actually James bought the bats in China. James ended up eating bats in China. I don't know if he was the one who bought them or not, but they give away just prizes that are like local delicacies, but there weren't any in this season.
Right. If these are local delicacies, you wonder what the local equivalent of these dummy prizes would be.
Sand.
Rocks covered with blood or something.
That's a good question. Yeah, but you know, I honestly don't really like it when they have the dummy prizes, because I feel bad for the people who buy them, because it feels like, all right, Survivor Auction, everybody gets to be a winner today. You're all going to win the reward today. And even if you don't get any items, you're still going to have some money left over. But say you bid your whole amount and get like some a live chicken that you can't cook and have to eat either whole or just throw away. Like, there's not much you can really do.
Maybe I'm more sadistic than you are. I like seeing people get dummy prizes. But
yeah, you are. Not maybe. You definitely are more sadistic than I am.
The worst part of this auction for me was Troyzan breaking down. Like, Jeff, I said, Troyzan, what do you miss? Like, oh, I feel so alone. Let's remember for a second. This is the same guy who, in the merge episode, said, it's Troyzan versus 11 people. This is what I've always wanted. And now he gets that and starts crying about it because it's too hard for him. Like, this guy is just retarded. I don't understand how people came to like him after this episode. Like, if anything, people should be jumping off the bandwagon left and right.
See, I wasn't really sure how his edit was supposed to be interpreted by, or like, what the editor's intentions were. If they were supposed to, I don't know if they were trying to rally up like some pirate ship fan base for Troyzan to kind of go on some Chris Doherty type run and take down the women. Or, because I honestly thought, like, his edit's been getting progressively worse over the last couple episodes, and I didn't realize there were some people who were viewing him as now this inspirational figure.
Right. It was weird, because he had what you might call a mixed edit, where in some parts he was made to look childish, and then in others he was made to look like a sympathetic character. Like, whenever you get that sort of thing, it tends towards a negative, I'd say, because if you're trying to big him up as a potential winner, you want it to be overwhelmingly positive. You wouldn't want to have to make him polarized like that.
Yeah, you probably, I honestly, and we'll get to our first place equity breakdowns at the end of this, but I have Troyzan off my list. I think we've seen enough of him just, isolating people and antagonizing people that he's honestly ruled out in the same way like Alicia, and I think honestly Tarzan are. I think Tarzan might beat Troyzan at this point in the final vote. I think his stock has gone down that much over the last couple episodes.
Well, you can debate whether intentionally alienating the rest of the tribe might be a good strategy with Troyzan, because he might be thinking his only way to make it to the end is to win every challenge. The only way he can change that is if he makes himself into a ghost so that people are willing to take him to the end, at which point he can maybe come up with a good jury speech or something, or, you know, refer the jury to his accomplishments and challenges or whatever, and maybe steal a win that way. I don't think Troyzan is thinking on that level, though. I think he is reacting genuinely and pissing people off because of it.
That's right, yeah. And again, there certainly is merit now in terms of, if you're Kim, you may be sitting there saying, oh, Troyzan's pissing everyone off. Why am I now rushing to vote him out of here when no one's going to want to work with him to overthrow me? Because in that sense, there certainly is merit in terms of he could definitely, by antagonizing so many people, definitely keep himself around longer in the same way that Philip Shepherd did that in Redemption Island and got carried to the end. But I think, obviously, if the goal is first place, then it's a detrimental move.
Well, Kim had another interesting secret scene where she said that Troyzan's presence in the game acted as a unifying force that brought everyone else together against Troyzan. And obviously, if their attention is devoted to beating him, it's not devoted to realizing that she's the one that's masterminding everything. So in that respect, we might be seeing the same kind of principle they had with Terry and Aris, where Aris was one of the big threats in the game and probably should have been voted out at some point once all the Remainers were gone. But the fact that Terry was in the game allowed Aris to keep himself around so he could play off against Terry.
Another example of this that I think demonstrates this concept very nicely from the world of Big Brother is Big Brother 12, where we saw this alliance just steamroll the whole competition, because as long as Brendan and Rachel were still in the house, that's all anyone cared about was getting them out, and they were always viewed as the biggest threat. So that the brigade, as they were called, could just kind of sit in the back and lead the charge against Brendan and Rachel from the sidelines and never have anyone come on to them, in terms of no one's even looking for other people to be as threats because Brendan and Rachel are still there.
Right, that's a great argument. And even after Rachel left, we saw the same kind of thing happen to a lesser extent with Brendan, where the brigade was able to keep him around for a few more rounds as a buffer, and then as soon as he's outlived his usefulness, they just discarded him, and they were in the final five. At that point, it was easy for them to coast to the end.
Yeah, it was game over at that point. So we get back from the immunity challenge, and immediately Troyzan starts going idol hunting, because he played his idol last time at Tribal Council and now thinks that it may be put back into the game. And as I mentioned last week, I do not believe it will be. We've been given no reason to believe it will be. And historically, it's always been one idol per tribe, and Kim has that idol now.
Right, and if Troyzan had found it, they would show that. Like, they wouldn't want to leave that for a future episode, where it's like, oh, by the way, Troyzan has an idol. But in an episode devoted entirely to Troyzan, they'd want to show him triumphing like that.
Right. No, he doesn't have it because it doesn't exist, I'm quite sure. There's no idol for him to even find. But the rest of the camp, Kim included, thinks, well, it's at least possible that they've rehidden an idol. So he ends up pulling a Rupert that we saw Rupert do in Heroes vs. Villains and kind of puts a rock in his pocket and tries to fake out that he has the idol so everyone gets kind of paranoid about it. And we see it come into play because the votes do end up getting split between him and Tarzan.
Right, but it's not clear that that was a direct response to him adding like that. I think even if you, in the dark, there's no reason not to play as if somebody has an idol. Because even if you're Kim, you've been watching for a long time, you have reason to believe that there's no idol in play. What is the downside to doing this if you're fairly sure you can control everyone's votes? There's just no reason not to do it at that point.
Well, I would say the reason not to do it is if you think you have the person that you'd have to give the second half of the votes to, in this case being Tarzan, under your wing. And we'll actually talk about Kim perhaps having Tarzan under her wing in a little bit. But you're right, generally, it can't hurt if you're not positive. And of course, she can't be positive unless she herself finds this imaginary second idol.
Sure, but I think Tarzan expects to receive votes at this point. Like, it's not going to come as a surprise to him. He's not going to take it personally. And even if he does, I don't think he's going to hold it personally against Kim. And Kim, I think it makes sense to discuss strategy now from Kim's perspective alone because, like, she's the one for whom the decisions are most important at this point.
Yeah, I agree. But I think if you're in a situation like if you, I don't think it applies in this instance because I think you're right. Tarzan can expect to get votes. And it's obviously nothing new for him at this point. But say you're at the say there are seven people left and it's six against one, and you have to split the vote because maybe that odd person out has the alliance or has the idol. Excuse me. You're then signaling to the other person to the person on the bottom of your alliance that they're at the bottom and that they were the expendable one should that other person have played an idol. And in that situation, I think it's hard.
Sure. So I think it might be right to stop doing that, for instance, after you have to vote out Tarzan, you're down to the women, because now you might be alerting Alicia or Christina or whoever to the fact that they're on the bottom.
Right.
But as it is, I think it's perfectly safe to just throw a few votes on Tarzan as a contingency plan every single round, as long as Troy's still in the game.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I don't know. And again, obviously, I'm of the opinion that it's never even going to matter because there's not going to be another idol for Troy's to find until Kim plays hers, which I think we may never end up seeing.
Right, Kim likely won't have a reason to play us until we reach the point at which Troy's on having the idol wouldn't matter anymore because it already would have expired.
Right. So I guess let's move now on to the immunity challenge. And this is the annual second chance challenge where they take some small parts of previous challenges that they've done over the course of the season thus far and incorporate them all into one bigger challenge. And as Troyzan won the advantage in the auction, he gets to sit out of the first of three rounds of this. And the first round is untying knots. And just to quickly get through that, Tarzan, Kim, and Christina come out of that round. And this is where we see Troyzan enter the game now. So there are four of them left. Troyzan's got a 1-4 shot. If he wins, he's safe. If he doesn't win, he's going to be the one going home. The editors have made no bones about that. Wouldn't you know it, he makes it through to the final round. The second one is they have to smash coconuts off their trampoline and smash them through targets. And it comes down to Tarzan and Tarzan for the final round. And I know, Dom, you were probably very excited at this point.
Yeah, Tarzan continued his challenge on us this week, which was a delight to overhaul. But the reason I like Tarzan, one of the reasons at least, is because he seems very genuine. With other people like Shane and Philip, you get the sense that they were playing this up with the cameras a lot. With Tarzan, I think this is just generally how he thinks about the world. This is like the way he approaches things. And I thought like the joy with which he took getting to the final round of that challenge, like we tend to be quite cynical on this podcast. Like, we like to make fun of people and stuff. But I think, you know, Tarzan was genuinely happy and I was pleased with him.
Yeah, absolutely, and I don't think you would find many people who disagree. I don't think anyone thinks Tarzan's playing it up for the cameras. He seems very upfront about things to the point of borderline like autism, but still quite a character. And I definitely think he's legit and certainly fun to watch. So we go to the final round, and of course Troyzan ends up beating him. It's the you launch a coconut, you got to get three in a row. It's bingo. And actually, I have a complaint about this because the way it ends up finishing is Tarzan, they both have several shots at getting three in a row. Tarzan misses his, and as Tarzan takes his shot, he doesn't connect with any of the panels, but he smashes it right in the center of, along like the wooden barriers, and the force of that just knocks out one of the panels that completes his three in a row, which I thought was bullshit. I thought he should have had to at least hit the panel.
Why does that matter, though?
Like, what, I feel why? Like that matters. He didn't hit the panel. Clearly, you're supposed to hit the target.
It baffles me that like, you're watching the show and you pick up on these things.
It's like, noticeable. He didn't hit the panel, and yet it fell down, and Brooks counted it.
Yeah, but so what?
I'm like Jonathan Penner when it comes to these challenges. Everything is a super conspiracy, and the world is rigged against me, I guess.
Okay, like, I can understand you complaining about challenges they were actually rigged, but now you're just complaining about basic physics.
All right, so, well, whatever. I didn't like it. I don't know what they can even do about it. I don't know if they should put it up and just reshoot it or what. But whatever. I mean, that was noticed, but I didn't like it.
If your argument is that you didn't like this happening because it led to Troy Zan winning, I am totally on board with that. But if you're just arguing against the idea that hitting something can dislodge something that's connected to it, which it's something you encounter in everyday life, then I think you're going a bit off the deep end.
Dom, excuse me for voicing my opinion about something Survivor-related on my Survivor-related podcast. I'm sorry that went so far out of your plan for the day.
It's not Survivor-related, though. How is it Survivor-related? It's something that just happened to occur on Survivor.
It's challenge-related, which is I felt like it was a bullshit way for someone to win a very critical immunity.
Okay, I'm coming up with an analogy on the spot, so bear with me here. Let's say Tarzan decides he wants to become a lumberjack. So he finds a machete, he goes up to a tree, and he chops it down. Let's say he only has to take, like, one chop and the tree just, like, flies into the ocean or something. Now, you're not going to complain, oh, well, it's on Survivor, so we get to complain about it. No, it's a matter of basic physics.
No, but the stakes of which these basic physics are being applied, and clearly not within the spirit of the contest, I felt like this is an absolutely massive challenge in terms of it's for Troy Zan's life. And for him to win like that, I thought was a bullshit way for it to go down. I'm sorry. I feel like we've wasted way too much time on this already.
Well, that bit I can definitely agree with, yeah.
All right, so let's move on. And actually, as a result of Troy Zan winning this, he celebrates a bit excessively, and it brought back memories to me of, like, Evil Dick and Big Brother 8 after winning the croquet challenge, where he's just kind of going off on everyone now that he's safe. And again, probably the social suicide long run. What did you think about that?
Well, I mean, I agree with you. It's a stupid thing to do. It's an immature thing to do. Like, you can debate whether it's a good thing to do strategically or not, but just on an interpersonal level, it's a stupid thing to do. It's childish. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, and generally, don't treat people like that. I don't know how apparent that is to people playing Survivor, but you probably shouldn't treat people like that in a game where to win you need them to vote for you.
Right, maybe this is just me being British, but like when you win, you do it gracefully. You don't go around rubbing it in people's faces.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how much the British really know about winning, at least when it comes to the Olympics, because we like to rub it in pretty hard. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. Ignorant Americans, we take ourselves a bit too seriously when it comes to competitions. And by the way, I hate it when people say that, when they're like, oh, I'm a competitor and I gotta give it 110% and that's just how I am. Granted, that may just be how you are, but it's still super annoying and horrible within the context of a game of Survivor.
Yeah, just because that's a facet of your personality doesn't mean that it's great. It just means your personality size as well.
Right, it doesn't serve as justification in my mind, at least. Yeah,
right.
Alright, so anyway, you know, he gets into it a bit with Sabrina again, but again, as you mentioned, we're going to be basically approaching the strategy from this point on from the perspective of Kim until we have a reason to change that. So now that Troy Zan's immune, what's the plan now if you're Kim?
Okay, so, well, to go back to the episode quickly, we get back to the camp and we see Tarzan washing Leaf in the ocean, which I thought was a scene we need to mention quickly. What do you think about this? It's just absurd.
I remember Leaf showing up to the challenge, and he reminded me of that little kid. I don't know if you've seen this video, but there was a viral video that went around of this little kid with all this face paint on and just saying, I like turtles, like some carnival or something, and it went viral, and that's what it reminded me of. He had that weird, like, gothic face paint on, and Leaf is about the size of that, of an eight-year-old child. That was the thought that went through my mind, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I was about to say it seemed, like, vaguely homoerotic. Like, you see, like, well, I remember on Palau when it was, like, Greg and Ian washing each other in the ocean or something, and and Tom,
yeah,
like, objecting to it. I don't know. I'm not sure what point I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, you have Tarzan kind of, like, rubbing Leaf's face off and watching. It was like a father after taking his son to the carnival, and now he gets home and has to put him in bed and stuff and has to wash his tiger face paint off or whatever.
That brings up a good point. You think Tarzan has kids?
I have no idea. I've done so little research. I just give so little shits about people's personal lives. I just want to watch them play Survivor.
Right, but the idea of Tarzan being a father is at once funny and disturbing.
Well, this is the thing. I feel like his kids would have an outstanding sense of, like, principle in terms of they would do things on the grounds that they feel like they were the correct things to do. I don't feel like he would be a bad father by any means, but it's certainly a bit kooky.
I think his kids would have a highly developed sense of irony. Like, if they wanted to become writers for The Onion or something, that would be a done deal.
Fair enough. We should look into this. I want, you know what? A couple weeks ago, honestly, for the first time it crossed my mind while watching the show that the two of us could potentially get to talk to some of these people at the end of the season, which is kind of a fun thought to have. But honestly, I think Tarzan would be a ton of fun to talk to in terms of just asking him about how things were on the island for him. Because I feel like out of everyone that conceivably we would talk to on this show, he would be just so different from anyone we'd ever talked to before or I would ever talk to again.
Right, and our diction and vocabulary probably improved tenfold as a result of it.
Just by process of osmosis.
So like, by being in Tarzan's presence, our grasp of the English language would improve dramatically.
Yeah, I think like Cochrane, we both are also big fans of, we appreciate good diction, especially for guests on our show, and I think Tarzan would have that in spades.
Even better than Cochrane, maybe.
Perhaps. I don't know. Cochrane's pretty damn, dictive. I don't know. Anyway. Let's move on. Now that Troy's immune, what are you doing here if you can?
Okay. So I think you do exactly what you did, which is you vote out Leaf on the basis that, firstly, There's no benefit to having Leaf there. At least with the other women, you've been with them throughout the entire game. You know how they're going to react to things. You know how you can manipulate them. With Leaf, sure, he's going to do whatever you want, but there's a chance he could win if he makes it to the end. He's a likable guy. You know, there are a lot of men on the jury now. That's not a variable you want to have to consider. And you know that Leaf seems to be loyal to Troizan. They've been voting the same way for the past few weeks. There's no reason to have someone in the game who Troizan can use as a pawn.
Yeah, I think in terms of if I'm Kim, my thought process is, all right, it has to be a guy. I'm not at all ready to vote the girls out yet because I think a big thing when you're in a position like Kim's where you're looking forward to, I'm probably going to be in the final three and I'm trying to make an active effort to win this thing. I think a big component of winning Survivor is booting people in a way that doesn't make them super angry. And I think Leaf, if you boot him here, is not going to be super angry at you because he doesn't expect to go that far. Whereas anyone else, I think, would be super angry at you because Leaf was still there and you could have booted him. And I think that it's something that I'm sure we'll be talking about in future weeks in terms of setting up Kim setting up her own jury, a favorable jury, I guess.
Okay. And one analogy that I think works here, which might be too belabored, but I'll make it anyway. A few seasons ago, when we were discussing Redemption Island, Coz, who we had on the show a few weeks ago, was saying that the Bottom Rod made a mistake in voting out Steve before Andrea on the basis that, you know, Steven's going to do anything, he's not a threat, whereas Andrea, you know, she's a fan of the game. If anyone's going to overthrow Rob, she's the most likely to do it. And the response I made at the time was that may be true, but that's outweighed by the fact that if you vote out Steve and then start running out Andrew and whoever you want, you can make the case when you get to the end that, look, I only started playing the game in a kind of cutthroat way when we got down to all Ometepe people. And I think the same thing applies here. If Kim keeps all the women around as long as possible, then they, as a group, have less reason to be angry at her if she does make it to the end.
Right, yeah. And again, I'm sure we'll talk a ton about that as we presumably are going to be seeing Kim kind of walk to the end. And hopefully get to see a lot more from Kim in terms of her thought process on the show. Granted, we've already seen plenty of it. But I think we're going to hear from Kim herself plenty of things along those lines as well, because I think Kim is a fantastic Survivor player, if that's not been clear to anyone who listens to this podcast regularly.
Right. So I think we both agreed that what she did was correct this week, and it's not really a difficult decision. What's more interesting is what she should do in future weeks. And I know we've touched on this before, and we both said what we think she should do. Has that changed in your mind since we last discussed that?
Well, one thing that's coming into play in my mind is her relationship with Tarzan, and I touched on this briefly, but I think, you know, I agree, I think Leaf is the boot there, but we've seen Tarzan vote with Kim, the last three or four votes, I think, and there's been some talk that perhaps they have some kind of side deal going on. Now, I'm not saying by any means that this is genuine or that it's going to take Tarzan any further than, if Troizan were to win next week's immunity again, I think that would be the end of the game for Tarzan. But given that she probably didn't have anything like that with Leaf, obviously, again, that's why Leaf would be the correct boot here. But again, sorry for saying again so many times. In terms of moving forward from here, I think Tarzan and Troizan, really have to be the next two, because the girls really need to be your final six, I think, for the reasons that we just laid out in terms of talking with Boston Rob and Ometepe. If you tip your hand before you absolutely have to, I think it's going to lead to much more bitter jurors, and jurors that are going to feel like you were just using them the whole time, rather than jurors that feel like, well, they just kind of got the short end of the stick once you'd already fulfilled your promise to take it as far as you could.
Right, and there's already the danger that Jay and Troyton will make that argument, and Mike even as well. You don't want to give the women the excuse to feel the same way.
Right. So from here again, I think take the men out, keep taking the men out. And I think a critical thing that if I were Kim, I would probably be doing at this point is I know I'm never, ever, ever going to vote out Chelsea. She is blindly loyal to me, and I don't think she can win a jury vote. She's not a good speaker. And I think that's pretty much it. For both those reasons, I think I'm keeping Chelsea forever. I think at this point, I'm going to tell Kat as well as Sabrina that they're coming to the final three with me and Chelsea, and hopefully wind up with that Fab Four sticking together, giving them no reason to question my loyalty to them throughout the entire point of the game, and then taking my pick at Final Four, and that pick's probably going to be Kat.
Right. When we last talked about this, I suggested that Kim should be keeping Tarzan around as long as possible on the basis that he's the ideal goat to take the Final Three, and that he's the least likely of people left in the game to wise up and want to vote her out later. If we do agree, though, that she should be wanting to keep all women around, then we go back to the other plan we discussed, which is eliminate Sabrina at Final Four and devise everything else on the basis that that's what you need to be doing. So Sabrina's going to Final Four. That leaves your Final Three as Kim, Chelsea, and someone else. So how do you work it out from Final Six to make that happen?
Right. I think it's probably going to be Alicia and Christina going out in some order at Final Four and Final Five, and then Kim and Sabrina Kat and Sabrina both thinking they're in Kim's final three, and then probably Kat winding up in that third spot.
Sure. I mean, do you think that's what she should do, or do you think that is our
potential? That's what I would do, at least. I think that's what she should do.
Right, because it seems very neat. So when you get down to six, you can say, well, Christina's been on the outside of our group since day one. Let's just make sure we all progress in the game and get rid of her. But when you're down to five, you can point to Alicia and Kat and say, look, these two are going to force a tie if they're there at Final Four. Well, they could do that at least, so we need to break them up now. You can vote out Alicia then, and then Final Four, you can point to Sabrina as the biggest jury threat and lobby to get her voted out. And now, if you're Kim, you're in a Final Three, which is very well suited to you winning.
Now, well, Sabrina is something I want to talk about now, because we've, as the Final Four buffer for Kim, saying on the grounds that if Kim's in the Final Four, people will probably recognize her as that the jury is going to want to vote for. So she needs someone more popular with the jury there. And Sabrina's been the person we've been assigning that role, but we've seen Sabrina kind of deteriorate a little bit over the last couple episodes. Do you still think she fits that role nicely enough? You know, this episode, obviously, getting into it a bit with Troyzan, but I think Kim having someone who the other people will perceive as a bigger jury threat than her for the millionth time is important at Final Four. So do you think Sabrina can still be that person?
I don't think we've been seeing that, and I think you're kind of mixing up cause and effect here to put it clearly, because I think if we are seeing this, it's to show why Sabrina does eventually lose. Because what you're saying is, we've seen Sabrina start to become more unlikable, therefore she's going to lose. Instead, how we should be seeing it is, Sabrina loses, and therefore she's being shown as starting to become more unlikable. It's not that she actually is being more unlikable in real life, it's that they're playing out that aspect of her personality when it does manifest itself in order to explain why she does lose, if she does.
Right, but again, I understand that. But if we're saying, oh, she's going to be the Final Four buffer because she's so popular with the jury, we're not going to have a reason to believe, oh, she's so popular with the jury if we keep seeing her getting fights with Troyzan.
Right, but there's no reason. We don't need to believe that that's actually true. All we need to believe is that other people believe that it's true.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm confused. I didn't understand Inception, the movie. I can't even begin to understand Survivor. Alright, so let's talk about next week. We talked about, in terms of next week, what we're going to see on the show is, just from the next week on Survivor at the end of the episode, is that Troyzan, Sabrina is suddenly interested in what Troyzan has to say, and Kim and Kat are fighting, and things may be deteriorating for Kim, which of course leads me to the conclusion that nothing's deteriorating for Kim, and that Troyzan's probably going to be the one who knows. Any argument there?
Well, either that or he wins immunity again. He can't get anything to happen. Tarzan probably leaves. Maybe Christina or Alicia, one of the girls. Doesn't really matter either way. And then it continues fairly predictably until either Troyzan loses immunity or he doesn't lose immunity and, you know, one of the girls will be like, and it's going to continue happening each week, with the same kind of manufacture of suspense happening,
right,
until we get down to the finals.
Yeah, alright, I think that's about right. So, are we good to get into our first place equity breakdowns entering next week?
Sure.
Can I take a wild guess at who's on the top of your list?
You may.
Is it Jim?
It is indeed.
Alright, where do you have it this week?
Well, last week I said your figure of around 90% was a bit excessive, but now I'm starting to come around. I think that's a perfectly fair estimate for her because, like you said, who is going to overtake her? The only way it seems to me that she loses is if everyone suddenly becomes a genius and realizes that she needs to be taken out of the game, or Troy Sivan wins every single remaining immunity and still manages to remain likable enough for the jury. And I think the chance of that happening is no more than maybe 5 or 10% at best.
All right, well, I also have Kim on the top of my list. But before I get to find out of this week, I think last week, I think I may have overreacted a bit and maybe been just so furious that I wasn't being given a reason to doubt Kim's win that 90 may have been a bit high. And I think it still is very, very high and comprises a massive majority of the equity. But this, I've rattled down a little bit, and I think this is a very fair number for now. Kim, I had 75% this week. I think there's still enough time that something can happen, but I think a vast majority of the time she's going to take it down.
Okay. If you need me to give an exact figure, I'd say probably about 85%.
All right, yeah. I think anything below two-thirds first place equity is based solely on what we've shown so far, is a vastly conservative estimate. Anything below, like, 66%.
Yeah, I think whatever the figure is, it rounds to about 85%.
All right, fair enough. Who do you have second?
It's between Sabrina and Troyzan for me. I don't think Troyzan can win based on the editing we've seen, but logistically, it does appear to be possible. I'm going to give second place to Sabrina as usual. I think her chances are slipping, despite the fact that I disagreed about what you said about her earlier. I think she probably has somewhere between 5 and 10%, probably closer to 10, given that the rest of the remaining entry is going to Troyzan. So give her about 10%, I say.
Yeah, that's actually where I have her as well. I have both her and Chelsea at 10%. I think Chelsea's had a couple of actually big episodes, and I honestly think if we're to lose Chelsea, one that we've seen enough of to be the most realistic candidate, but I think from a jury perspective, Sabrina has a better shot, so I have them both right around 10% with there's a little bit of time left, but I don't think they're by any means favorites to win.
I think you're forgetting how Chelsea was just buried by the editors pre-merge. The whole thing about crying about the shelter and being shown to be bitches to the men and stuff like that, this is not the way which I think she'd be portrayed if she were to win, given that, like, remember in the first episode, we had that whole over-the-top thing with her catching the chickens and, oh, isn't Chelsea like Joan of Arc, goddess, or whatever. They could continue editing her like that if she were to win. The fact that they didn't is suggestive to me.
If I can bring a bit of history in here, I think Jenna Marath got a vastly more negative edit throughout most of Amazon and still went on to win.
Right, but I think everyone can agree that Jenna Marath's edit was anomalous, and you can't bring in that to justify the argument
for right.
Just anybody winning. Like, people have moved on since then.
The thing with Chelsea is, two episodes ago, we considered her episode not to be great, but some friends who watched Survivor got messages saying, oh, this is a big episode for Chelsea, maybe Kim's win is certain, but not, they didn't say this in this term, but perhaps we have some reason to doubt Kim now, because I think a lot of people have been starting to like Chelsea more, even though we're considering it, based on historical and perhaps even more just logical reasons, a bad edit. I think many people can still find ways to like Chelsea, just from what we've been even seeing the same footage that caused us to not view her as a winner candidate.
It seems to me like a lot of the people who like Chelsea are kind of projecting the reasons why they like her onto the general population. I don't think she's that popular to the average Survivor.
Okay. That may be the case. And then again, just quickly, I have Sabrina, basically for all the reasons you said, I think she's still got a shot. I have her at 10%, and then I have Kat holding in there at 5%, and I don't have anyone else on my list. What number do you give Kat? It's not zero. Don't you dare tell me it's zero.
I give her 0%.
Oh, my God. Oh, and by the way, I can already guess your answer on this. I made a bet. This is the first time I think I've ever bet money on Survivor. I bet $20 with a friend of mine. I have Kim against the field. Do you like that bet?
At even money, right?
At even money.
Well, I think you're just printing money. That's, like, if I weren't such a pussy, I'd put as much money as I have on Kim winning. And if I could find someone to bet with.
For at even odds, yeah. All right. Anything else to add before we get before we wrap up this fantastic episode?
Truly fantastic. The observant among you will have noticed that we still don't have any intro or outro music, which, again, is being rectified. We hope to bring you that before the end of the season, or at least that's a hope, at least. So you should be hearing that. We have no more news on the guest run. People have been quite slow to respond, but hopefully that's going to change pretty soon. And as always, if it does, we'll let you know. That about covers for me, unless you have anything else.
I think that's it. So thanks for listening, and we will see you guys next week.